I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Attorney General Bob Ferguson's office lashes out at us for our coverage of his chicken check debacle. Plus, the Seattle City Council elects a moderate as its president.
We have one job, and that is to work together to do the most good for the greatest number of people, period.
And the president of Harvard has resigned, and I will tell you, some of the media coverage of that resignation is borderline unhinged. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense come back. I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up later in the show, Bob Ferguson's office is not happy with our coverage of the fact that his office is sending checks to a lot of dead people. So we'll get into the questions Nicole sent, the very reasonable questions that Nicole sent to get answered, and the insane response, sassy, I think is a good word for it, sassy response that we got from the Attorney General's office. But first, I do want to start in the city of Seattle, because we know that the what happens there and the level of crazy Seattleites are willing to allow has a direct reflection on the level of crazy that lawmakers in Olympia are trying to push. Sarah Nelson has just been elected as the new president of the Seattle City Council. I mean, this is great news. I saw someone say online, this is based for Seattle. So this is like very anti-woke in Seattle terms. I tweeted out, thank God, when that happened, and somebody commented, I think it was on Twitter, she's a Democrat. Not all Democrats are created equal, okay? And Sarah Nelson, who's a very reasonable business owner, pro-police, concerned about crime, she is far better than the alternative of what kind of city council president Seattle could have. So she was sworn in at their first meeting with all the new council members, because you do have, by and large, a fully new council, with the exception of a couple. And here's what she said her mission will be.
We have one job, and that is to work together to do the most good for the greatest number of people, period. That's it. My grand vision as council president is simple good governance. And I believe that if we do business this way, we will do a whole lot of good for our constituents and deliver results for the people of Seattle. So I'm proud to be here. We've got a fresh start. Now let's get to work. Thank you very much, everybody.
I like it. Her remarks are really short and sweet. And she makes a good point there. For people who are like, well, it's still different shades of the same blue in Seattle and I still don't agree with them, that's fine. I mean, if you're a Republican, for instance, chances are you're still not going to like an awful lot of the things that come out of Seattle City Hall. However, I think this is going to bring the adults back in the room. Shama Sawant is now gone. For the first time in a decade, we don't have a socialist, an actual admitted socialist, on the Seattle City Council. And the amount of performative politics that she brought to that dais was insane. And it sidetracked a lot of important business. And I don't believe that's going to happen. Now, I'm also hopeful one of the results of that will be fewer activists packing council chambers. Now, I'm all for people coming and sharing their opinion and making their voices heard and speaking to the council members. But what you had when Shama Sawant was there, she was very effective at rallying the far left fringe activists toward whatever cause that she was taking up on any given week. And oftentimes it resulted in other council members who didn't have a backbone caving in, Andrew Lewis, who's also no longer on the council. And it resulted in complete disorder in council chambers, where sometimes they'd have to adjourn because they couldn't get business done. Seattle has a lot of challenges that are only getting worse. Public safety. We talked on the show earlier this week about the fentanyl crisis, record number of overdoses. We need people who are serious adults, who are serious about doing the city's business. And as Sarah Nelson said, which I wonder if she heard that on our show, because it's something I say an awful lot about what common sense governance is. It's doing the most good for the most amount of people. You're never going to be able to please everyone, but your goal should be doing the most good for the most amount of people. So I was happy to hear her say that. You guys, I think this is very good. I'm very critical of Seattle. I'm critical of politicians. I don't give them a lot of leeway. This is very, very good. And all I can hope is that these new council members, you know, the moderates are now the majority, that they stay true to commitments they made on the campaign trail. Because you've had council members in the past, in Andrew Lewis, in Dan Strauss, who campaigned on one thing and then turned around and did something completely different under pressure from fringe activists. So it's important, and I'll say this too, as much as it might hurt sometimes to compliment or proactively compliment members of the Seattle City Council if you don't agree with the city's politics, positive reinforcement is huge for politicians. It's as important as criticism. Because they, politicians and members of the media are the same too. We very rarely get, like, besides from you guys, because you love us, we very rarely get positive reinforcement for some of the work that we're doing. Because usually if somebody's reaching out, it's to criticize you. And politicians experience the same thing. And I'm not saying you don't criticize them. Obviously, they need to be held accountable. But when they do something that is not unhinged, I honestly think it's worth it to email their office, even if you're not one of their constituents, and to say, hey, I saw this idea you put through or this vote that you took, and I'm just really glad because I think it'll have XYZ positive impacts for the city. So I would encourage you to do that, to really think about, okay, not just criticizing, positive reinforcement, and let's let them cook and see if they can undo some of the damage that has been done. All right, one more quick story before we get to our, what do I want to call it? I'm going to call it a soliloquy. What do you call it when you just go into a, there's a word for it, diatribe?
Sure.
Diatribe.
Yeah, that works.
Mm-hmm. On the Attorney General's office communication staff. I'm looking at you. No, I'll get to it. First Republican has entered the race for Attorney General since we've been talking so much about Bob Ferguson. I mean, he will not be the Attorney General anymore, whether he wins the governor's office or not. There have already been two Democrats that long ago entered the race. One of them, and this is where I say, not all Democrats are built the same. Monica Dingra, who was responsible and has been responsible for pushing some of the most detrimental public safety policies, Senator Monica Dingra in Olympia is running, and then Nick Brown. And the verdict's out on Nick Brown. So Nick Brown served as the United States Attorney in the Western District of Washington, so the same job that former Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin had before she became mayor. Here's my thing on Nick Brown. I do, between him and Monica Dingra, like Nick Brown, 100%, 150%. However, as I've sort of watched his career over the years, I'm worried that he is just bends to political winds. I would like to see and to know who he really is as a politician, as a person, because he does have that tendency, from what I've seen in my opinion, and this is my opinion show. So I'm not sure. It almost strikes me as an Andrew Lewis type, where it's like, okay, I'm going to say this, but if the political winds change, my opinion is going to be completely different. That's not necessarily the kind of person I want in the Attorney General's office. So, First Republican has entered the race. It seems like the state Republican Party is coalescing around them to say, this is our guy. His name is, he's a Washington attorney. You might recognize his name because he has participate in some high-profile legal challenges, Pete Serrano. This is from the Seattle Times. Washington attorney who fought gun laws, COVID mandates, plans run for state AG. He's an Eastern Washington attorney. They say he was at the forefront of legal challenges to the state's gun control laws and COVID health mandates. So he's now running for attorney general, first major Republican to throw his name in, which is interesting because I thought for a while Ann Davison would. I really thought Ann Davison might. Apparently, there were some conversations with her behind the scenes. She doesn't want to. And so Pete Serrano threw his name in. We look forward to having him on the show. I know Nicole's already been in touch with him. We'd like to have him in the studio and have an in-depth conversation about what his ideas are and what direction he would take the Attorney General's office. I will say his name recognition isn't very high, so he's going to contend with that, as most Republicans from east of the Cascades would have to contend with. But also, you know, as much as we've been talking about Dave Reichert and the great opportunity it is for Republicans to capture the governor's office for the first time in 40 years, and as much as there are some solid, qualified Republicans who are running for other positions that are up in 2024, it really, to me, it's going to unfortunately come down to the presidential race in a lot of ways. The impact that the Republican presidential candidate has on down ballot Republicans, regardless of their quality, cannot be understated. And even with a Dave Reichert, man, I feel bad because I think what the state Republican Party is trying to do is say, hey, let's get some legit, qualified, reasonably moderate candidates and back them 100%. because we have Dave, we're going to have Dave Reichert on the ticket, probably. I know you, there's still some semi-Byrd supporters, but he's out of money, so I don't know where he goes from here. So you have Dave Reichert, and for Republicans down ballot, that is as good of a gubernatorial candidate as you can get. So, of course, people who might have been thinking about it as Republicans, worried about, you know, the potential to win, they're going to be like, Dave Reichert's on the ticket. That makes it much easier for us. However, what if Donald Trump's on the ticket? Does even considering Dave Reichert's name recognition, et cetera, it hurts him. It does. And I asked you guys in our daily subscribers show poll today, I said, putting aside their likelihood of becoming the GOP nominee, which Republican presidential candidate would be the least destructive to down-ballot Republicans in the November 2024 election? Trump, DeSantis, Haley, Ramaswamy, or Christie? And the vast majority of you are saying Nikki Haley. Again, putting aside, is that likely? I mean, right now it appears that Trump is going to be the GOP nominee unless there's some sort of substantial change or shift in the race. But I do agree with the sentiment from a lot of you that Nikki Haley, in part because she's a woman, I hate to go back to identitarianism, but I think that can be a little more disarming for moderate women or independent women who are worried about abortion rights. So I do agree that Nikki Haley would probably be the least destructive to down-ballot Republicans like Dave Reichert, like Pete Serrano, if no other Republicans get in the race and try to challenge him ahead of the primary. A couple of your comments on that particular issue. Travis says, easy money here. A Haley nomination doesn't remove all the criticisms from the Washington State Democratic Party, but it will make them look petty and small in comparison. And I think what, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you're referring to is in part the abortion issue. It's harder to vilify someone as hating women and being a danger to women if they are in fact a woman. Paul Barden says, the myriad of attacks on Trump are merely representative of the almost hysterical attempts of the most ambitious leftist Democratic officials to try to distinguish their fealty to the Democratic power structure by attacking their nemesis. They all want credit for destroying Trump's chances of re-election. But honestly, Trump's the best thing that's ever happened to Democrats. I think they love the guy. I think they want him in office so bad, especially for Democrats locally. And I said this, I was still at Fox at the time, but when Trump lost re-election, that was the end of their scapegoat. They had used him as a scapegoat on so many issues that he had nothing to do with. And they also used their attacks on him on other issues to distract from the crises that we now see have ballooned to the point of no return around homelessness and substance abuse. So you get Trump in office, oh, you give him back their scapegoat, and all of a sudden they find very creative and unfortunately efficient ways to distract from their failure by pointing to Orange Man bad. Chris says, if you want to see more tax money flow out of the U.S. to Ukraine, by all means, nominate Haley. Thankfully, the bad Orange Man is pulling well over 50%. Chris, that wasn't the question, though. If whether you like Nikki Haley or not, do you think she would be less destructive to down-ballot Republicans in Washington state? Linda says, Haley seems to be the best chance. She's not Trump, and some consider DeSantis as Trump light. She might have the best chance to get the middle. Plus, how horrified would Dems be if the first woman and a woman of color president was a Republican? That's so true. If oh my goodness, well, they'd vilify her, which is fascinating because Democrats are all about like, oh, women and people of color. But if it's a Republican woman, nope. If it's a Republican person of color, nope. Just fascinating how that works, isn't it? So we will, and Nicole, we're going to have Pete on the show for sure. We're just sort of holding off on some of the 2024 candidate interviews while we enter the legislative session here. But Pete Serrano, the first Republican to enter the race for Washington Attorney General. Let's hope that he, Dave Reichert, and others can get a Republican presidential nominee who isn't going to totally ruin their chances. All right, coming up next, Bob Ferguson's office's unbelievable response to our legitimate questions about their chicken checks. But first, it is the new year after all. I know Mike and I are working on our family budget now that we're married. We're budgeting as a couple. Isn't that cute? Never had to do that before. I'm talking about joint bank account, totally beside the point. Very interesting. But it's also about budgeting as a family in the new year, given some of the other stressors that you're under. Insurance might be one of those things. You know, it is a really weird insurance market right now. And I'll say having someone like First Mark Insurance in your corner is more important than ever. Why? Well, Nicole, we've been getting a ton of emails from people because we've mentioned, you know, some of the crime issues on the show who are getting dropped from their insurance because they were the victim of some sort of crime. And so it is a really complicated insurance market to try to navigate on your own to know which claims do I actually file, which claims do I just eat, because otherwise it's going to have a negative impact on my ability to be insured now or into the future. Dave Taylor is the CEO of Firstmark, and he talked a little bit about this issue.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss, so like a windshield loss.
Sure.
Right? Just a little ding in your windshield. And they come in, and we don't have a carrier that will take them.
For a ding in their windshield.
Right, for a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already, but it's just, I'm just saying, there's never been a better time to be a broker, because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
Yeah, and that is a reality. And trying to navigate that yourself, if you can imagine how difficult that is, getting dropped by an insurer because you were the victim of a crime, which is happening to a lot of people, both private citizens and businesses. And then you're calling place to place trying to, you know, get them to take you. Having someone like Firstmark be able to do that work for you is really critical. So take the Firstmark challenge. You just schedule a little time, present your insurance needs to them. They'll go out, they'll talk to the big box carriers, and they'll get back to you with a solution. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the Firstmark challenge today. They work for you. All right, Bob Ferguson is big mad. Again, I made that the title of the show today because when I came up with that title, Bob is big mad, I thought that sounds familiar. It's because I named one of our episodes Bob is Big Mad back in September, because Bob gets big mad at us a lot. So Bob is big mad at us again. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right, there are two things Bob Ferguson's office is losing their minds about right now. They're feeling the heat, okay? They're feeling the heat, and they should be feeling the heat. So the first one is about that issue with the Climate Commitment Act and Puget Sound energy rates. It's a story we've talked about a lot. So there have been a lot of lies and concealment around the impacts of the Climate Commitment Act, the carbon tax, et cetera. One of the efforts at concealment came from the Attorney General's office. Puget Sound Energy said, hey, we need to increase rates. This is a story I believe it first broke back in August. Puget Sound Energy said, we need to increase rates because of the carbon tax and it's driving prices up, et cetera. They go to the State Utilities and Transportation Commission, say we want to list that this on people's bills so they know why their rates are going up. The Attorney General's office advised the State Utilities and Transportation Commission not to list that as a line item on bills. And I'll get to the rationale in a second, but this was, again, a story that just pointed to the Attorney General's office not siding with transparency. And Republicans have really tried to, and rightfully so, I mean, this is an issue I think they are well within their right to harp on. The lack of transparency from Bob Ferguson's office, and just generally speaking, the concealment around the impacts the Climate Commitment Act is having on working class people. So the Washington Senate Republicans, the Senate Republican caucus, they've been tweeting out about this a lot, as I guess they should. And they sent out a tweet that Bob was not happy about, and he responded, which I said this on the show the other day, he almost never responds to criticism. But you're seeing that more and more, which I think is a sign that he's getting flustered. So the Washington Senate Republicans said, regressive new taxes from Democrats and Governor Inslee are causing gas prices to soar, while Bob Ferguson hides the taxes impact on your increased utility bill. Families and individuals need this to stop. We have a plan. Bob Ferguson responds to it from his official Attorney General account. This is the 30th post from this account that includes this same falsehood. Our public counsel unit advocated for additional discussion on the topic. Our position is straightforward. The Climate Commitment Act should be treated the same as every other program that impacts rates. And he went on to highlight part of the recommendation the Attorney General's office made to the commission. And he highlighted the sentence that said, we believe the issue of whether to itemize these charges and credits on bills requires more discussion in upcoming workshops. And it's really convenient that he highlights that because he doesn't highlight a few other key sections when they're, first of all, calling you guys dumb, saying PSE does not provide a reason for itemizing in its filings. If all program-specific charges were included as line items, customer bills would quickly become incomprehensible. So if they were to list this on your bill, you dum-dums just would not understand what it meant. And yes, the Attorney General's office said we should study this more, but that's really just a scapegoat because the rest of their advice clearly was suggesting to the Transportation Utilities Commission that adding that as a line item was not the best idea. but we should study it more. Okay, that's just trying to get yourself off the hook for having to make an unpopular decision. So I would not at all call it a lie what Republicans are saying about the efforts at concealment here. But Bob Ferguson says this is the 30th time. So anyway, that's something totally separate from us. The chicken checks. I don't know if I've ever seen a response quite this sassy from a taxpayer-funded spokesperson. So a little bit of context here. As you guys know, because I continue to get emails from you, the Attorney General's office has been sending out checks that are, you know, $50 to $120 that are part of a settlement from a price-fixing lawsuit around chicken and tuna companies. And as you know, they're sending out these checks to what are supposed to be the very poorest Washingtonians, the very poorest families. And what we've discovered by getting emails from all of you is that these checks are going to a lot of dead people. We've heard from people getting checks for loved ones who've been deceased for 40 years. We've heard from people who the check came to, you know, their first name, someone else's last name. We've heard from people who got checks like addressed to loved ones to their home when that person's never been associated with their address or hasn't lived with them for 30 years. So there were very clear issues with the rollout of these refund checks, not to mention that Bob Ferguson is putting his name on all of them and sending them with a letter like, hey, here's how great we are. Here's $50. We hope it helps. So anyway, Nicole, over the weekend, and admittedly so, when we talked about this story on Monday, what did we say? We said we'd reached out to the Attorney General's office, but it was on a holiday weekend, so we understood why they hadn't gotten back to us yet. But the news cycle doesn't end. It doesn't mean we're not going to do a story because we've waited 2 days, you haven't responded, and we've got to wait for your response. So anyway, Nicole sent a very professional, good job, Nicole, very professional email to Brianna Aho, who is the spokesperson for Attorney General Bob Ferguson. It read thusly, hi, Brianna. We are getting a lot of emails from folks that received checks as part of the chicken tuna settlement who either did not qualify or had their address on it, but the addressee was a family member or some variation of family members' names. Some of the checks were made out to parents or spouses who died a number of years ago. Could you share with us where the data that qualified these folks came from? What will happen to unclaimed cash from checks that are not cashed? What should people do with checks that they received in error? Thank you, Nicole. That seems pretty reasonable, sending that to a taxpayer-paid spokesperson for a public entity and an elected official. So we wait a couple days. We do our segment on Monday. And after that, Brianna Aho finally got back to us. I think it was yesterday?
Yesterday.
Yeah. She finally got back to us yesterday after we'd done the segment on Monday.
Which was the first working day of the week so for her.
Yeah,
so
that's fine. Fair. First working day. I'm not criticizing them for taking so long to get back to us. This is the response to Nicole's very reasonable email. Hi, Nicole. It's interesting you ran your story before receiving answers from us, with the initial inquiry coming on Saturday, the weekend of New Year's Eve. Thank you for letting us know it was the weekend of New Year's Eve. We otherwise would have been completely oblivious to that fact. The data comes from Experian. We mailed more than 400,000 checks. The defendants paid for all costs for mailing the checks, including postage. We have a claims process open for anyone who is eligible but did not receive a check. Our price fixing lawsuit is not done. We still have a trial scheduled against multiple large companies that we allege were involved in the conspiracy. We expect to prevail. If further resolutions are reached before trial, we will determine what to do with any additional recovery. As a result of a different lawsuit, we did send around $3 million to food banks in 2022, and I don't recall you covering it on your show. Okay, let's just break this down. I have a couple points that I want to make. When she says it's interesting you ran your story before receiving answers from us, if we waited to get comment back from every public agency we ever reached out to comment before doing a story, we would never do any sort of government accountability stories because they wouldn't get back to us. Also, we already knew that it was a story. We had dozens and dozens of checks and emails from people saying this check was written to a dead person. That's a story in and of itself that we don't need comment on. The comment adds context, it adds information. The comment is certainly important for any follow-up story as to what happened here, but we didn't need them to confirm that checks were going to dead people. We had confirmed it for ourselves. We didn't need them to confirm that checks were going to people who didn't financially qualify. We had already confirmed that. I would also point out, when they say the data comes from Experian, that's interesting. We'll get to more on that in a second, because we had questioned what is exactly the database. But as far as the other inexplicable point of SAS, when she says, as a result of a different lawsuit, we did send $3 million to food banks in 2022, and I don't recall you covering it on your show. That comes because we said that a viewer had a great idea that this money, to make things simpler, should have just gone to food banks, as opposed to trying to identify people who might qualify for a small refund check for chicken and tuna that they may or may not have purchased. The reason, Brianna Ajo with the Attorney General's office, that we didn't cover that on our show in 2022 is because there, to my knowledge, were no problems with the rollout of that money. $3 million was sent to food banks. Nothing controversial about that. It wasn't sent to food banks that had been closed for 40 years. It wasn't sent accidentally to for-profit grocery stores. We don't tend to cover things that don't need the eye of journalism or the criticism attached to it. So that makes no sense to me. Now, I will say, Nicole followed up. Nicole, it was funny. She sent me that email. I was like, oh my gosh, what is this about? And Nicole sent an email with just a few follow-up questions. And we listed them just so she couldn't get around answering like each individual question. The questions were really reasonable. What is the AG's response to the reports of checks going to people who have died? We've seen claims that some of the addressees died over 60 years ago, long before Experian was even founded. How did this happen? What specific data set was Experian asked to use? What will happen with unclaimed funds? What would you recommend folks who receive checks with errors do with them? Report them or simply toss them away? Again, all of these are very legitimate questions. And just before the show started today, we did receive a follow-up from Brianna. Hi, Nicole. To reiterate, Experian put together the list of recipients, including names and addresses. But again, that doesn't answer the question. You already told us it was Experian. We want to know how Experian could have got it so wrong. How could a company that wasn't even founded until the 90s have someone in their database who died in 1966? What specific things did you ask them to use to come up with a list of people who'd get the checks? We've asked those questions specifically, saying Experian put the list together. Oh, is not an answer
are
to our question.
You didn't give them any guidance?
Yeah. Are you saying, yeah, did you not give them any guidance? She goes on to say the claims administrator is instructing people who received a check in error to destroy it. Unspent funds will be available for individuals filing claims. So at least that's one answer. What do you do with a check? If you got a check that you weren't supposed to get, you can destroy it. So if you got a check you weren't supposed to, take a picture of it first, and then you can destroy it. But this response doesn't answer any of our legitimate, important questions. Now look, I understand we're very critical of Bob Ferguson. If you want to be sassy in your response to us, that's fine, but answer our questions. If you want to answer our questions with a little sass, that's fine, but answer our questions because that's what we pay you to do. That's what our viewers and our listeners pay you to do. They don't pay you to send us a sassy response where you don't answer our questions. What data was Experian asked to use to come up with a list of people to send the checks to? We've since followed up with another question. Given that this is a complete failure, will you continue to use Experian for this purpose? One would hope not. Is there going to be an investigation into this? Or do you just chalk it up to, we used Experian and they sent checks to a bunch of dead people. Our bad. It's wild stuff. Now, not a surprise, perhaps, that the Attorney General responded to a different news agency, less unhinged. MyNorthwest.com, Cairo Radio, their headline, Attorney General Ferguson responds after state sent checks to dead people. He says, quote, we worked with Experian, so it's not our list. Oh, how convenient for you. You're not going to ask them maybe what happened there, what went wrong? He says, we went to a data broker or somebody who would have what we believe to be as reliable as a list as can exist for sending out 400,000 checks to Washingtonians. Obviously, on a data set that large, the system's not going to be perfect. It's far from perfect. We are one podcast and you sent out $400,000 checks, were one podcast, and I would say between comments, between direct messages, between emails sent to pictures, no less than 50 people have told us that these checks went to someone who shouldn't have got one. So that's obviously a drop in the bucket for the number of people who received a check who shouldn't have. And the dead people checks are the ones getting the headlines. But what about checks to who went to people who aren't poor? We've also heard a number of those stories. A teacher who says, I'm nowhere near the poverty line. Someone who said their dad got a check and was deceased, but was also very, very wealthy while he lived. So to suggest that it's not going to be perfect, it's far from perfect.
I had somebody reach out saying, should I be worried about identity theft if my dead husband got a check? Because is his name out there attached to something?
Experian, right. And if it's coming from Experian, and that's why we made a point in the email to the Attorney General's office to say, you say this list is from Experian. We have at least two documented accounts of people who died before Experian was even a company. So how did they wind up on any sort of database that Experian might have? Bob Ferguson goes on to say, of his name being on the checks, look, I get what this is all about, but this is a practice that we've been doing for literally a decade and nobody's complained. I get that people are complaining now because I'm running for another office. The state Republican Party is literally tweeting out that people should sign their checks over and donate them to the Republican Party. Yeah, and look, it's not necessarily the practice that I have a problem with, and there's nothing illegal per se about the practice. Now, whether it's a PDC violation is another issue entirely. Previous times that Bob Ferguson has sent out checks like this, he wasn't running for another office. So is it a misuse of public funds? I would also point out that when Brianna Ajo said in her initial response, you know, criticized us for not covering this $3 million they sent to food banks from a settlement in 2022, that to me is just further proof that sending out individual checks with Bob Ferguson's name on it in an election cycle wasn't necessary. Because in the past, when you've had some sort of, this was a grocery related settlement, you have sent it to food banks. Why didn't you send it to food banks this time? Why did you choose to go through Experian for some complicated, complex sort of decision making on who was poor enough to get the checks, even knowing that the checks would be going to people who hadn't necessarily even bought chicken and tuna? So you chose, rather than do the very simple thing that you did in 2022, when Bob Ferguson wasn't running, you chose to do something very, very complex with a lot of room for error so that Bob Ferguson could put his name on the checks? That's certainly what it seems like to me. Now, when it comes to what you should do with the checks, as Brianna Ajo said, they're encouraging you to destroy the check if you it's not yours, or I don't know, if you don't want to cash it. If it is addressed to you, but you don't want to cash it, I guess you could destroy it or you could endorse it over to someone else. But I like what Marie Donnelly from Richland, Washington did. She got a check that was addressed to her stepfather, who is deceased. So she decided to send the check back to Bob Ferguson with a little letter attached. And in it, she wrote, "Dear Mr. Ferguson, I received this check at my address made out to my stepfather, Francis Donnelly, who passed away 10 years ago in 2013. My mother, who also lived at this address, Joanne Donnelly, passed away in 2022. I am now the legal owner of the house at this address. While I appreciate the gesture of throwing pennies to the peasants over chicken nuggets and tuna sandwiches and corporate greed, I'm sure it has nothing to do with the upcoming election year. I can assure you no votes will be received from either my deceased parents or myself. Therefore, I am returning this check to your office to do whatever is appropriate. Thank you." Oh, so good. I love it. Love it. That is a really good thing to do with your chicken check. If you don't want to cash it, you could send it back with a nice little note attached. Unbelievable. All right. Coming up next, we're going to get into the Harvard president resignation debacle, but really through the lens of how the media has responded. It's been insane to watch. And insane to levels above and beyond what we're used to with the corporate media. If you are in the market to sell your home, or maybe it's a rental property, you know, we've been talking about the real challenging environment that landlords are in right now, certainly in Seattle, now in Tacoma, with some of these strict landlord-tenant protections. We've also shared individual stories. You know, we're talking about Jason Roth's story in Seattle. He's got a guy living there, not paying rent, and it might be more than a year before you can get him out. And Wes told us that he has talked to a lot of people who are having similar rental issues, including a friend of his.
There is a friend of mine in my neighborhood who has a rental home, and somebody moved in 18 months ago and never paid, you know, got some charity, you know, to pay a portion of it, and now is behind over the last 8 months. Has never paid, you know, has never paid personally, and come to find out more recently that tenant is a repeat offender and did this to another neighbor in my neighborhood the previous 2 years, and kind of hid behind, you know, those COVID laws, you know, that had come up with the eviction moratorium.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, this is a really difficult environment to be a small landlord in. You know, if you don't have hundreds or thousands of units and you've got a couple units and somebody's in one of them not paying rent, that can be make or break for you. So if you own a couple rental units and you're really struggling with whether to put them on the market, get in touch with our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. He can give you a free market analysis, also talk about some of the services that they provide to get your home ready for sale, or if you're selling them as rental units, to get your units ready for sale. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, the Harvard president has resigned, Claudine Gay, and this is under a lot of pressure that really began with the university's lackluster response to pro-Palestine, in some instances, anti-Semitism on campus. And then while she was under that cloud of scrutiny for that, you had people who were digging up information on her, as happens when someone is in the public eye. And there's been 40 odd accusations of plagiarism. Students can get expelled from Harvard for plagiarism, yet you have the president of Harvard with 40 documented allegations of plagiarism. So she resigned under pressure. Here's the headline from the New York Times. Harvard president resigns after mounting plagiarism accusations. And of course, she essentially blames it on racism. She says, amidst all of this, it has been distressing to have doubt cast on my commitments to confronting hate and to upholding scholarly rigor, two bedrock values that are fundamental to who I am. And I'm frightened to be subjected to personal attacks and threats fueled by racial animus. Now, do I think that some crazy wackos on the internet probably did hurl personal attacks and threats fueled by racial animus? Yes. Do I think that those were the predominant criticisms of her tenure at Harvard? No, but this is a tactic. Remember, we talk about this a lot. When you're under criticism, rightfully so, we see this on the left a lot, that they will point to the most extreme criticism they're receiving that is not the norm, and they'll use it to try to get sympathy so people back off. And that's what she's doing here. New York Times says Dr. Gay's resignation came after the latest plagiarism accusations against her were circulated in an unsigned complaint published on Monday in the Washington Free Beacon, a conservative online journal that has led a campaign against Dr. Gay over the past few weeks. The complaint added to about 40 other plagiarism accusations that had already been circulated in the journal. The accusations raised questions about whether Harvard was holding its president to the same academic standards as its students. And that really is the issue for me. You know, and the plagiarism is, I hate to say it like this, the plagiarism in this context is worse than missteps on the pro-Palestine stuff. Because as a university, you can make arguments about free speech, even abhorrent free speech, although I do not believe they were morally consistent on that issue. But we can have a reasonable conversation and debate about what should be allowed, what shouldn't be allowed, what you should say in response, what you shouldn't say. Although obviously she was a failure when she appeared before Congress. But the plagiarism is cut and dry. You would dismiss a student for doing that. And you've been accused of it. And the examples of it are very clear, by the way. I mean, you have full paragraphs ripped off. And she says, oh, it was a citation problem. That's not a citation problem. You didn't have quotes around it. Like, I'm sorry. So anyway, that's all crazy. And it doesn't surprise me that she would try to make herself the victim in all of this. The media coverage, I already have a low bar, low expectations, especially on issues where race is involved. Low bar for what the media coverage is going to look like. This takes that to a whole new level. I mean, it's lower than I've ever seen. Instead of this being about Claudine Gay's actions, about her plagiarism, about her support of anti-Semitism in the form of silence. This is about conservatives. This is about conservatives attacking her because of her race, because they don't like Harvard as an institution. And the lengths that, so I'm going to read just two examples of this, one from Politico, one from the Associated Press. So the Politico headline, "How the Right Toppled Harvard's President." So it's putting like the responsibility on the right as opposed to the person who did wrong. It says, "Coordinated attack. Conservatives who have long been at war with elite academic institutions have pointed to these universities' responses to the conflict between Israel and Hamas as the latest example of the ivory tower's skewed values." As they should. That's a legitimate criticism that does speak to a larger problem. Politico goes on to say, "Today, the right got a strong dose of satisfaction by engineering the departure of the head of the most influential university in the world." Engineering the departure by highlighting things she did? That's the right engineering the departure of the head of the most influential university in the world? Now look, conservatives did not relent on this. Christopher Rufo was one of them. I'll get to him in a moment. They did not relent. But it wasn't as if they were making things up about her. They were trying to keep it in the news cycle until mainstream outlets started covering it, as they should have from the beginning. It's bizarre to all of a sudden plagiarism's fine, totally acceptable. All of a sudden anti-Semitism's fine, totally acceptable. And because it's conservatives who are raising issue, it's what, manufactured? And for them to say the right got a strong dose of satisfaction, I'm sure that they feel satisfied with the result. But in framing it that way, you're suggesting that they shouldn't be satisfied, that they've done something wrong in bringing attention to what she's done. It just shows the media's hatred for anyone who's conservative. Now, bear with me, because the Associated Press article is even worse. And the scary thing about the Associated Press is they feed a lot of the other outlets in the country because they're a wire service. So you'll see Associated Press articles republished in a lot of different print publications, television websites, etc. So when the Associated Press does something absolutely unhinged like this, it's going to end up in a lot of other places, and there are going to be a lot of eyeballs on this sort of content. So the tweet from the Associated Press, Harvard president's resignation highlights new conservative weapon against colleges, plagiarism. First of all, plagiarism isn't a conservative weapon against colleges. Colleges have policies against plagiarism. That's your own weapon that you've used, rightfully so, to kick kids out of college. So how can your own rule for conduct be a conservative weapon? The article goes on to say, Christopher Rufo, who was a former Seattle City Council candidate, a conservative activist who helped orchestrate the effort, celebrated her departure as a win in his campaign against elite institutions of higher education. On X, formerly Twitter, he wrote in all caps, "Scalped," as if gay was a trophy of violence, invoking a gruesome practice taken up by white colonists who sought to eradicate Native Americans. First of all, they do realize that Native Americans did a lot of scalping. So there's kind of a history lesson that this Associated Press writer needs to learn. As if gay was a trophy of violence. So now it's words of violence, silence is violence, pointing out that someone plagiarized his violence. I also, the use there, this is, how do I put it? This isn't just casual bias. You see a lot of casual bias in the media where the writer or the person maybe doesn't realize their own bias or how they're writing something is steeped in bias. This is intentional and malicious bias. When you look at Christopher Rufo, a conservative activist, let's say that someone had pointed out an example of a conservative who'd engaged in plagiarism. Do you think they'd ever be described as a liberal activist? As a progressive activist? No, there's a connotation there that the Associated Press wants to get across. Christopher Rufo, a conservative activist who helped orchestrate the effort. And orchestrate to me has this connotation of something done with evil intent. we've orchestrated this whole plot to get her out of office. No, they highlighted things she actually did. And then she had to face the music for things she actually did. Conservatives pointed it out, but they didn't make her do those things. They didn't hide the fact that she had done those things like she did for many, many years. They just wanted her to be held accountable. And this is exhibit A and B, why people don't trust the media anymore. All right, we will get to your questions and comments for the live stream coming up next. But first, we still need to have the sponsor of this bill on our show. We'll work on that.
Oh, yeah, I touched base yesterday, but
of course you
we're
did.
Working on
we're
it.
We're working on it because I love this bill in a sea of absolutely ridiculous proposals in Olympia, one of which we will end the show with, Insanity Check today. A great bipartisan proposal that would require seniors get half a credit of financial literacy classes before they graduate from high school. Not only do I think this is good for helping them understand the basics, but also empowering them. Giving them, you know, knowledge that they can go out on their own and they can succeed building wealth, helping set up responsible responsibility for them. And today's youth is incredibly important. But anyway, we asked Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital about whether he thinks it's a good idea, and he thinks it's brilliant as long as it's taught well.
To even understand how to write a check or what writing a check means, right? What is that money? I remember as a kid, my mom saying at the store, No, we can't afford that. And I remember looking at her and going, Mom, look at all the checks you have left. Right? Like, write a check, you know? So I, you know, and I think all kids probably think like that. And you know what's interesting? You bring this up. Our good friend Dory Monson and I used to talk about all the time, as soon as he retired from radio, we were going to do financial literacy classes together for families and things like that. So it's a passion of mine. I'm a firm believer if the average person really, and it's kind of what we try to do on our show to some degree. It's not so much politically aimed, obviously, but financially, trying to explain to people what these things mean, right? Like if you understand what they actually mean, if you understand what's going on, if people knew what was actually going on financially in this country, I am convinced elections would go differently.
Yeah, I'm convinced the same. So Zach Abraham talks about these on his radio show every week, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. This is an issue he's passionate about, as are we. We've talked about it on the show before, which is why I was really happy to see this bill introduced, because I think when we look at the younger generation and where kids are at and some of the violence and the lack of accountability, you know, giving them a path toward, I don't want to say necessarily building wealth, but financial independence, giving them something to look forward to. Responsibility, but it's more than that. It's like giving them something tangible where they can control their destiny. And I think that's what I'm getting at, is like we have all these systems that are telling people and politicians that are telling especially kids of color, like you'll never amount to anything because the institutions are there to hold you down. It's like, no, let's empower those kids. Let's empower those kids to build wealth. Let's empower those kids to get themselves on a different financial path than perhaps their parents were. So that's why I really love this bill. So anyway, we'll talk more about that as the session progresses. And Zach Abraham will be back on the show with us tomorrow. All right, let's get to questions and comments. On Sarah Nelson being elected the Seattle City Council president, Nicole, why can't I talk today or yesterday? Let's do it together.
Oh, don't ask me. Yeah. I can't talk either.
That's why Nicole hasn't been on camera. Like she's got the
hair's a mess.
My you look fine.
Sweater makes me look bulky.
Oh my gosh, wow. We are so hard on ourselves.
Right.
Let's just do one. How now, brown cow, together.
Okay.
Good. Okay. Good. Now I'm on it. Sarah, on Sarah Nelson, Rachel Cisneros says, Brandy, you also had higher expectations for Bruce Harrell. I hope you're right on this one. But I think Bruce Harrell has been an improvement. One, he hasn't been had, I mean, Jenny Durkin was distracted by a lot in 2020, and I don't think her response to that was particularly good. But Bruce Harrell, I still want to see him do more. He says a lot. I want to see him do more. But saying the right things when you're a person in power does make a difference. If we had Jay Inslee saying something about what's happening at the border, that does make a difference.
Right, and I think it's baby steps. We would like baby to stay steps. See some adult steps, but but right now they're baby steps.
Yes.
And I think we're all looking for these big fixes on, like, police getting officers to stay or come to Seattle, and we're looking for crime to go down. We're looking for drugs not to be used on the streets of Seattle everywhere. So
no.
Those things are going to take a while.
They are. And you do have to be realistic about it. We've gone so far downhill how do you even begin? 700 officers gone, although I did hear out of the Seattle City Council meeting that their priority in 2024 is going to be getting officers the contract that has been long delayed, which does go a long way in getting officers to stay and to feel respected and to feel valued. It's not enough, but it's a baby step.
It's a baby step.
It's a baby step, but it is important. I know it's important Absolutely. To the union and to the officers. So that's good. There's not, I mean, look at the depths of the crisis. We said on the show yesterday, in King County, they have a record number of fentanyl overdoses last year. Over 1,000, 7,000 who were overdosing and were revived using Narcan.
That's a wild number.
You can't dig yourself out of that in 10 years.
No.
I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, so baby steps. And that's why the response I was getting about, why are you so excited about Sarah Nelson? She's a Democrat. Sarah Nelson is a good kind of Democrat. And like a lot of those, they're not really Democrats. They're independents. A lot of these reasonable, moderate people who feel like they have to associate themselves with one party or another,
like a party. Mm-hmm.
They're just independents. I say that of Senator Mark Mullen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, just run as an independent. Your own party thinks like is just holding
really
you down anyway.
To win as an independent.
I know. I'm just saying.
But I agree with you that's kind of where they're at. When you don't agree with everything the party, but I don't.
Right.
I also don't. I wish that wasn't a thing where you didn't have to agree with every aspect of the party, I guess.
Well, then you're persona non grata. I mean, if you don't agree with Donald Trump, then you're just a rhino, which people love our conversation the other day about Donald Trump.
I know.
Anyway,
it's funny.
Moving on 2024 candidates, Edward Owen says Republicans in our state need to address head on the elephant in the room regarding Trump and abortion rights. Deal with it clearly and completely upfront. Take the issue away from Dems and their likely attack on those two issues. That's 100% exactly right. You can't. I mean, look, I struggle with this because I understand that you don't want to abandon your values or your principles or abandon a politician who you might like or support because it'll serve you better on the ballot. But this is politics, and sometimes that's the decision you have to make is, do I take a stand or do I win? And then am I in a position to be able to make a difference at least on something? You have a lot of Republicans who are pro-life, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there is a difference between you being personally pro-life and what you would do if put in a position politically to change, either erode or further protect abortion rights. And there's a lot of Republicans in our state who are pro-life, but who say that abortion was decided by the people in the state and they're not going to change it unilaterally. So I agree with you, though, getting out in front of it before it becomes an issue. And then when you kind of take it's, I use this comparison a lot. You remember, Nicole, the movie 8 Mile with Eminem?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where he's like, oh, I'm so ready. Wait, what is it? Mom's spaghetti. I'm nervous.
Mom's spaghetti.
But on the surface, I look calm and ready to drop bombs. So anyway, there is a scene in that movie mm-hmm. where Eminem is in a rap battle and he's in like the finals. Mm-hmm. And he's super nervous and he doesn't know what to say. And then he gets this look in his eyes like he's had an idea. And he goes first. And he spends his rap just dogging himself. Like just saying all he knows what the attacks are going to be. So he takes the wind out of the sails of the other rapper.
I don't even remember.
And
that.
He just, I love this scene. Mm-hmm. And he just says, oh, I know what you're going to say about me. He lists all the things about him being white trash, whatever it is. Like someone had sex with his girlfriend, like brings up all that stuff. And then the other guy just gives up and walks away because he's like, wow, you just said everything I was going to say and I have nothing left. So that's how I compare this is like, you know, Republicans in this state absolutely know, you're right, Edward Owen, they know Republicans what Democrats are going to say. So, you know, pull an Eminem, Slim Shady, get out in front of it, air it all out, and then move on.
Exactly.
And then you win the rap battle.
It's going to be trending on YouTube later, that scene.
Yeah. It's a good scene. It's a good movie. Okay. Anyway, on the Chicken Checks, Two Ladies Midwest Adventures, Brandy, your humor is so priceless at times. Thank you for helping us swallow this bitter pill. This way we can keep fighting so we don't just ball up and cry. You know, I don't get enough credit for being funny.
That's true.
Or humble. I mean, I'm hilarious.
Hilariously humble.
I always say that to Mike. I was like, you don't tell me enough how funny I am.
Oh, you say that to all of us.
Oh, okay. It's because I feel like I don't get enough credit.
Give me more credit. Give me more credit for being funny. You do make me laugh.
Thank you. Admin Scott J says the state has records of low income houses. Why is there a need to put a list together from Experian? Their database is terrible and requires its victims, I mean users, to fix their errors. I agree. And that's why you did it in 2022. You just sent it to food banks. But now you're using Experian to come up with some complex list. that you know isn't going to be reliable, because how could it be? To send checks to people who you admittedly don't know whether they even bought chicken or tuna. We got one email from someone who says they're a vegan. I was like, hey, you didn't get chicken or tuna. So that's why it's suspicious. And Bob Ferguson said to Cairo Radio that, oh, this is because I'm running for another office. Yeah, it is. It's because you're currently in office. But also, yeah, you're going to be under more scrutiny for everything you do because you want to be governor.
Right.
And you want to run the whole state, and you can't even get checks out to people who've been alive in the last 60 years.
And one of the lines from the letter, I think, is, I fight for you. I take action. This sounds like a campaign.
It absolutely sounds like a campaign letter. You can send the check out and just explain to people in nuts and bolts, here's what happened. Here's why you're getting it. Sign it. And I still would have had an issue with that, but it did sound like a campaign letter.
Right.
All right. Jason M. Oh, God. People are filing claims. Why not just write a check to Nigeria? Save them the hassle of all the phony paperwork. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people are going to go to the Attorney General's office website, file a claim for a $50 check, and then do whatever necessary paperwork there is to get it. Some, probably.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not discounting like $50 or $120. But
more power to them, but they had already kept some money for those people, and now they're saying the people who got checks that aren't going to be cashing them because they're dead, that money is also going to that fund. So it seems like there might be a lot of extra funds, and they still haven't really said what will happen with that. I mean, they said they might add it to some other fund or whatever. But
Because if people don't claim it, there's going to be a lot left over. Mm-hmm. It should just be sent to food banks. Kathy Carr says, so they used a credit agency? Is it based on a credit rating? Are they assuming that anyone with bad credit rating is poor? And here's the thing about Experian. I have an Experian account for credit monitoring purposes, although I should cancel it because I have other credit monitoring things now. But I like it because it, you know, gives you everything you've got in your name, whatever your balances are, whatever it is. Yeah. And then you get updates on where your credit score is at. So I like it.
Is it free?
Being someone, no, it's not free.
Oh.
There's a free version.
That's what I'm saying. Credit Karma does that for free.
There's a free version, but then there's one that goes further than that.
Okay.
But having grown up poor, having, you know, gone through the creditors calling the house and being told, don't answer, I'm not here. I was like, I am determined to have good credit. I like to monitor it. But anyway, I'm thinking about all the things that they track, that I know they track because I have an account. You know, they'll have your car loan or whatever, your payments or past car payments. They'll have any credit cards that you have open, any loans that you have out in your names. Mm-hmm. When I signed up, you did have to put your income, although I haven't updated my income on there since I quit my job, right? So I'm trying to understand what would it be, and then it has your credit score. I don't understand how all of that they could glean if someone is 175% of the federal poverty line. That's what doesn't make, unless you're just using,
you're relying on their given, the just their account of their numbers, right? Because you're not going to their income in the IRS.
Right.
You're going to what they say they make
but,
on a
but
website.
If you don't have an account, then you've never said it.
Right.
So I'm so confused. And that's why, the questions you ask the office are so legitimate. And even when we followed up a second time, the response wasn't even close to answering the questions that we had. The state has to get to the bottom of how this went so wrong.
They could have at least said it's under investigation.
Right. We're looking into it.
We're looking into it. Not, it was some other person's
problem. Oh, it's Experian's list, not ours. Oh, how convenient for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think those are all the questions and comments that we have today. Before we get to our closing sanity check, new year, new you. If you've been thinking you need to shed a little weight, maybe just get your energy back, which has been one of the great parts to me of the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. I lost 37 pounds and all of a sudden I had enthusiasm to do things I'd been putting off, like doing yoga classes, etc. So there are a lot of other benefits to it. But the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic team and Dr. Ryan Coogan, they are so wonderful. They're all also very good looking. Are you looking at that picture?
Well, I would hope so.
If you're watching on the if you're watching on the stream, I mean, but they're all like tens.
Yeah.
Why are they all so good looking?
Because they're all on the
Weight aside, they're all just
weight loss plan.
We're all special flowers and all tens and all very attractive. I just noticed that for the first time. I'm like, wow, they're all very attractive.
They're all tucked in their shirts.
We're super off track. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to say is the whole team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic is very attractive. And if you want to be too, no, I'm just kidding. Beauty comes in all shapes and sizes. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can do it virtually. You can do the entire program virtually if you'd like to. And it just takes a little bit of time to decide whether it's right for you, because it's not going to be right for every person. So once you go through the program with Dr. Coogan, you can make a decision. But worth a phone call. It's only 15 minutes of your life, and you could, like me and so many others, just get fantastic results. Speaking of, this is a weird segue. Before we get to sanity check, did you see there's a fat con in Seattle this weekend?
I did.
First of all, I saw this video.
It could be the sanity check.
I saw this video going around for it. And like, look, like I said, I don't believe weight is an indicator always of health. I don't believe weight is an indicator always of beauty or whatever it is. So I'm not trying to be that way. But being clinically obese is not healthy. It's not beautiful. It's not, it's scary, and people die from that. And so when I see these videos and this woman who is pitching it, who's obviously, I mean, I would say like 450 pounds, it's like, that's scary and sad. And the fact that you're having like some conference to see that as empowerment shows how backward our society has become. I've talked about America's compensation problem before, where it's like, you know, we had slaves, which was very, very bad. And then, you know, we worked on that as a country, and slavery ended. And then you had Jim Crow laws, and we worked on that as a country, and that ended. And then you get toward this period in time where now it's like, oh, well, we treated Black people in this country like crap for so long. So now let's flip the tables and like start to discriminate against white people. And so, you know, you go back to the 90s when I was growing up and in high school and stuff, and all the models were like real thin. And all of us girls wanted to be just rail thin, like the Paris Hilton with absolutely no butt or no curves. And that was the standard of beauty. And that was too extreme. So now it's like we're with the way body positivity. And now it's gone to the way different side of the spectrum where you can be clinically obese and it's somehow held up as a beauty standard. And they're having an empowerment thing in Seattle this weekend. Come on, that's just ridiculous. Those people are not, that's not healthy. No doctor on the planet, hopefully, would tell you that that's healthy. So that could be one of our sanity checks
today. Maybe they'll have somebody from Eastside Weight Loss Clinic there, and maybe it's to get help.
Nicole. Nicole, just bringing the sponsors full circle.
Yeah, that's what I did there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, but
moving on.
But yes. In all seriousness, just before I get to sanity check, you can't, that's not even something that, yes, like you can start with diet or exercise, but when you're to that point of like obesity where your life is on the line, you need professional medical intervention of some kind. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be gallivanting around Seattle talking about how great it is to like be on the verge of death. Anyway, I'm sure somebody will clip that and say, Brandy hates fat people. Okay, no, look at, do you have my, oh no, never mind. Okay, just move on. Closing sanity check.
I gotta get through it now.
It's just too much today. All right, all the stuff going on in the state of Washington, a short legislative session coming up. I mean, what? Name the issues. Homelessness, crime, drug abuse, record overdoses, all these things they should be laser focused on fixing. Six voter initiatives that they really should consider adopting. And what are Democrats focused on? They are focused on House Joint Resolution 4208. And what would it do exactly? Well, it would take out the gender-specific language in the state constitution, such as Article 1, Section 7. Instead of no person shall be disturbed in his private affairs or his home invaded without authority of law, it will now say no person shall be disturbed in their private affairs or have their home invaded without authority of law. Another example, Article 1, Section 9, no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to give evidence against himself. That'll be changed to themselves or be twice put in jeopardy for the same offense. Look, fine. That's fine. I agree. You know, him, huh? Like, I'm not a him.
Was anybody confused that it thought it didn't
include females? Did anybody think that the Constitution didn't apply to women? But also, you might say, Brandy, they can walk and chew gum at the same time. Obviously, they cannot, because they have shown us that they cannot walk and chew gum at the same time. So if these are your priorities in the 2024 legislative session, we are, and we continue to be, absolutely doomed. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Really quick note, Nicole, can you come back to me?
Oh, sure. Sorry.
Stop the music. We are not going to have our regular show tomorrow. because, and I think you guys will be okay with this, there is a legislative preview happening in Olympia from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. where the leaders of the House and the Senate come and answer questions, and Governor Jay Inslee comes and answers questions. And that might be my only time to be in front of Governor Jay Inslee asking questions.
You better answer yours. You better not get the Cho treatment.
Well, now that I've said I'm going to be there, he might not come. I've already been invited by the press corps. So I'm a legitimate bona fide attendee. So that's where I'm going to be. I hope you understand. We have a lot of questions that I would like to ask Jay Inslee. I don't believe that the media has asked him some of the questions they need to ask on the Climate Commitment Act. So we'll be in touch tomorrow. I'll just say that. But we are not going to have our regular live show at noon. Okay, cue the music. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not become a subscriber already, please do so. It's 2024. Huge election year. We are trying to grow. We could use your support. It's $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com.